His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured DJ in the history of music television. It's the Week in Music with Lyle and Jim, and it all starts now.
Hey everybody, my name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, Sinead O'Connor goes missing, Kesha is not allowed to perform at the Billboard Music Awards, Radiohead may get sued, the Beach Boys celebrate an anniversary, but before we get to all of that, the Red Hot Chili Peppers canceled their headlining show at the K-Rock Weenie Roast this weekend when Anthony Kiedis was taken to the hospital with severe stomach pains. It was later announced that Kiedis was having complications from the intestinal flu. The band Minus Kiedis appeared on stage that night when they made the announcement. So they were ready to play. My question is, do we buy this?
Well, it's a good question, and somebody raised the point to me, like, who goes to the hospital for the stomach flu? I mean, and all of us have had these problems. I don't think of going to the hospital. The only thing I can think of, Jim, and I don't know this world that well, but the only thing I can think of is there an insurance issue there.
So what, if he doesn't perform? So if he's on stage and he has to cancel mid-set?
Yeah, is there in order to attach the insurance, do you have to sort of show like it was so severe that I had to go to the hospital?
Okay,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. And
yeah, see, what I don't want to do is speculate and try to make this sexy story to say, well, it could have been drugs. The only reason I say do we buy this is because we've had similar scares like this before.
Mm-hmm.
Prince goes to the hospital, and they said it was the flu. And we're like, oh, okay, we thought nothing of it. A week or so later, he's dead.
Right.
Kurt Cobain in Italy, they took him off to the hospital, and we thought, well, Kurt Cobain's better, and then a few months later, he's dead.
Exactly.
So is this a great big warning sign for us?
Well, there's just no way of knowing. There's no way of knowing, but I agree with you. It's certainly on the face of it, it seems suspicious. But
because I've read his autobiography,
right?
And if you read his autobiography, it's a surprise he's still alive,
right?
So
yeah, I think
if I'm part of the team, if I'm part of the Chili Peppers team right now, I'm on top of that 24/7.
Absolutely.
And the reason I bring this up too is because I would imagine the stress is higher around this time because the Red Hot Chili Peppers are going to tour Europe this summer on June 17th. They're putting out a new album. It's fun to release an album, it's fun to tour, but there are pressures that come along with it.
Absolutely.
We wish Anthony Kiedis the best.
Absolutely.
And Flea, the whole team, just stay on top of that. Earlier this week, Sinead O'Connor was reported missing in a Chicago suburb and was classified as a missing suicidal. On Sunday morning, she embarked on a bicycle ride. There aren't many details, but yesterday, she was reported found and no longer listed as a missing person. There was concern because 6 months ago, O'Connor sent out a Facebook message saying that she had overdosed in a hotel room, apparently brought on by various family drama. And O'Connor, most of you know, recently accused Arsenio Hall of being Prince's drug dealer, who then sued her for libel. He's seeking $5 million in damages. And for those that don't know, Prince wrote Sinead O'Connor's most well-known hit, Nothing Compares to You. The weird thing about this story is that no details are coming out.
Mm.
They said she's found and that's all the world knows.
Yeah, conspiracy alert, conspiracy alert.
Yes, as you like to do.
Well, I was thinking about the possibility of her trying to mount a defense against the libel suit on the basis of insanity. Now, I did a little bit of research into this, and courts generally reject the idea of insanity or temporary insanity as a defense against libel.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of factors that go into libel that are boring. We won't go into them, but generally speaking, insanity will not be a very good defense against, it certainly isn't an absolute defense against libel, but it could be taken into account by a jury in the event that the case gets to that point.
Kesha was scheduled to perform at the Billboard Music Awards this Sunday, 8 p.m. on ABC. performing a tribute to Bob Dylan. We should point out Bob Dylan is still alive. Her label, Kemosabe Records, will not allow it. As most of you know, Kesha is in a well-known legal battle with Dr. Luke, who is the founder of Kemosabe Records. The label was afraid that Kesha was going to reference her fight with Dr. Luke, although she promised not to. But doesn't this just open the door for someone else or multiple artists to say something on Kesha's behalf?
Certainly does. And by the way, did they actually state that, the label, did they state that that was the reason?
Or that she's going to say something? Yeah. No, that's speculation.
Oh, that's speculation. Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me because, again, I don't really know the complete relationship between her and the label, but I don't know exactly how they nix her performance. I mean, if she's invited and she wants to show up, I don't know where the label has the ability to tell her she can't do that.
I mean, is there a contract that's signed?
Could be.
From the get-go, and if she does perform, she's going to be in another legal battle?
See, that's the thing, though. I mean, I don't know that there could be a clause in a contract that says we have to approve all of your appearances, because that would be getting yourself into dangerous legal ground. There was a big issue early on with talent agencies where they would put in there, you can only play when we book you. And what they would do is they would stop booking somebody because they were angry at them. And then the person would be left with the inability to perform and make money. And eventually that stopped. If they failed to book you, then the contract was voided. So I don't know exactly how the label has the power to say you can and cannot do this. But again, I mean, who knows?
Kemosabe is part of Sony.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's some deal with Sony and Billboard if Kesha performs, then this artist can't perform. Who knows if she signed a contract, you know, back in the day saying, well, you can only perform on award shows if we say you can perform on award shows.
Right.
So Kesha will not be performing her Bob Dylan number. And if you're interested, other artists performing include Celine Dion, Pink, DNCE, The Go-Go's, Justin Bieber, Nick Jonas and Tove Lo, Demi Lovato, Britney Spears will be doing a greatest hits medley, Fifth Harmony, Ariana Grande, Blake Shelton performing with Gwen Stefani. And as a old school No Doubt fan, that just makes me shake my head. Rihanna and Meghan Trainor, and Madonna will pay tribute to Prince. From what I've read, I don't think it's going to be a musical tribute.
Oh.
I heard she will be on stage paying tribute to Prince. Because all the press that I've read about performances, Madonna's not under the press paragraph. She's in another paragraph.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that happens this Sunday, 8 p.m. on ABC. So last week, we had our Radiohead Bitch Out episode. There's some drama with the lead single off of their latest album, Burn the Witch. The video borrows heavily from Gordon Murray's stop animation children's show, Camberwick Green. Murray's family is considering taking legal action, saying Radiohead should have sought out our consent as we consider this a tarnishing of the brand. It is not something we would have authorized. We consider that there is a breach of copyright and we are deciding what to do next. And apparently, they didn't want Murray to watch the video because they said he would have been appalled. And Gordon Murray, on the internet, it says he's either 94 or 95 years old.
So I guess you can be appalled to death. Is that the theory here?
Maybe.
It's kind of interesting because, and now you have to understand that British law sometimes differs from American law, particularly when it applies to libel or slander. And I don't know what that is all about. The word tarnishment, they use the word tarnish, right? And tarnishment is when you infringe a copyright or a trademark and you paint it in a negative light. So in other words, I'll give you an example. If I were to do a fake Coca-Cola commercial where I implied that there was cocaine in it and I showed a bunch of people like snorting cocaine out of a Coke bottle, that would be tarnishment. And they would certainly come after me and tell me, you know, what you've basically done is said that Coca-Cola is equivalent to using drugs. It's an attack on the reputation of the brand. So mm-hmm. the question to me, though, is, first of all, have you watched any of the Camberwick Green at all?
I've just seen, like, little clips of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a stop animation children's show. The video looks like it, and for those that haven't seen the music video, a guy comes into town, accuses a lady of being a witch, but the tables are turned at the end because instead of her being burned at the stake, the town turns on this guy, the authority figure, and burns him at the stake.
Right, which is reminiscent of the movie The Wicker Man.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, we should point out that this show was a 1966 show, and as far as I know, it only had 13 episodes.
Yeah.
So it's not an ongoing, I mean, it may be shown, but it's not an ongoing concern.
Mm-hmm.
It also, to be fair, I mean, the video that Radiohead did, the stop animation, also borrows from every stop animation, particularly the Rankin Bass stuff that was Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I mean, personally, I don't see it. Now, again, I don't know what the law is in England regarding this stuff, but I don't really see how it tarnishes that brand. I'm not sure what that brand is. Maybe the brand has a lot more status in England than we know about.
Because if it does have a lot more status, wouldn't it be like an American band making a video that kind of looks like the Muppets, but it's not really the Muppets?
Well, and by the way,
and we would think nothing of it.
But that's been done, right? Didn't Phil Collins do a video?
Yeah.
Yeah, which had sort of Muppet-like characters in it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, evil is in the eye of the beholder here.
We'll see. On Tuesday, after being in declining health for years, including a battle with cancer, Texas country folk singer-songwriter Guy Clark passed away in Nashville. He was 74 years old. His songs were sung by Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Ricky Skaggs, Emmylou Harris, Kris Kristofferson, Vince Gill, Jimmy Buffett, Brad Paisley, Alan Jackson. The list goes on and on and on. Guy Clark won the Grammy Award for Best Folk Rock Album in 2014 for My Favorite Picture of You.
Yeah, Guy Clark was one of those people, again, we talk about diving deep into the world of music. He was one of those guys where everybody knew him in those circles, mm-hmm. and he was revered. And it's something that most of us don't really know about because all we do is listen to the songs. We don't really realize mm-hmm. that he's behind them. And that's mm-hmm. true of a lot of songwriters, a lot of famous songwriters. It's a shame. It's a shame. It's a damn shame.
Yeah, and even one of my favorite country artists at the moment, Casey Musgraves, sent out a tweet memorializing Guy Clark. So he's worked with the old-timers and the people fresh on the scene.
And that's hard to do.
The Beatles' first publicist, Tony Barrow, the man who coined the name Fab Four, died in his home at the age of 80 this week. Barrow was a writer who hit up his contacts once he became the Beatles' publicist. He also wrote liner notes for their early British recordings, and he recorded their last live show at Candlestick Park in San Francisco in 1966.
Wow, so he came up with the Fab Four, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. But that's nothing compared to my publicist when I was in the Meat Men, Leon Doc Washington, who came up with my, you know, the famous thing about me called the Onerous One. So for those of you, now we're back into the definitions thing. For those of you, onerous means tiresome or exhausting. So I think that pretty much applies to me.
So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will warm up the old carometer right here on The Week in Music with Lyle and Jim.
Pack up all your dishes. Make note of all good wishes. Say goodbye to the landlord for me. But some bitches always bored me. Throw out them L.A. papers and that moldy box of vanilla wafers. Adios to all this concrete. Gonna get me some dirt road back street. I can just get off of this L.A. freeway without getting killed a car. I'll be down a road in a cloud of smoke to some land. I ain't bought, and it's his to you. Oh, skinny Dennis. The only one I think I will miss. I can hear that old bass singing, sweet and low like a gift you're bringing. Play it for me one more time now. Got to give it all we can now. I believe everything you're saying, and just to keep on playing.
All right, let's turn it on. The Carometer. And here's how it works.
We need theme music.
We have sound effects.
We need a jingle. You know, the Carometer, it's coming on. It's going to move from left to right. That kind of stuff.
Lyle, that was beautiful.
I know.
Should just write the Carometer jingle.
I'm a Charlie Harper type.
So let's turn on the Carometer. Up first, this week, the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds album turned 50 years old. Though it wasn't an out-of-the-gate success, it is considered one of the great albums of all time. What does this rank on your Carometer?
10.
Yeah, baby.
You agree?
I'm going to give it... You know what? 50 is a big number. We celebrate 20-year anniversaries and 30. This is 50 years. I'm going to give it a 10, too.
Yeah. And not really because it's 50, but because it's still good.
Oh, my gosh.
It's funny. So it's funny. I've gotten into arguments with people about this over the years. You know, music people who are like, oh, the Beach Boys, they suck. You know, blah, 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 Kokomo. You know. And I'm like, dude, that's all fine and dandy, but listen to Pet Sounds, please. Please.
Because I remember, like you, I heard all of the Beach Boys singles on the radio, and I remember reading stuff about Pet Sounds and how it was revolutionary and how it changed music recording. And I thought, well, I should listen to it. So I went out and I got the Pet Sound CD and I listened to it. And to me, I didn't think revolutionary. I just thought, well, this is awesome. This is great. This is how an album should sound.
Right.
But I guess I would have had a different picture of it had I listened to it back in the 60s.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to remember when the record came out, a lot of people talk about the idea that Pet Sounds is a reaction to Rubber Soul from the Beatles, mm-hmm. right? And that Brian Wilson was trying to, he said, oh, Rubber Soul, that changes the bar. Now we're going to move it up. And that Sgt. Pepper's was a reaction to Pet Sounds. Now, I don't know whether any of that is actually true. And mm-hmm. I mean, there have been hints over the years, but no one's ever come out and actually said, yeah, I decided I wanted to best Pet Sounds, or I decided I wanted to best Rubber Soul. But, and I guess it's really hard for us now to look back at those times and realize like how distinctly different it sounded.
Right.
Because if you want to do it sometime, go back and look at what else was recorded in 1966, mm-hmm. and then listen to that and go,
yeah.
whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where you get it, because if you compare it to today's sound, then you're like, oh, whatever, you know.
Yeah, because the world has caught up.
Sure, absolutely.
So Moby just released a memoir titled Porcelain that takes us through his early DJ years and cuts off right before the release of his most successful album, 1999's Play. What does this rank on your Carometer?
I'm going to let you go first on this one.
I love reading artist biographies. I'm going to give this one a 7.
You know what? I had written on my sheet a 7.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I can't... I don't know that much about Moby at all. And so I don't know... And I don't know how much I want to know. But again, I'm with you. It's like I like reading this stuff because I like to try to understand where they came from, where they were going, where they thought they were going, what mm-hmm. they thought they were doing. It's interesting that it cuts off at that point, though, which leads you to believe there's a volume 2 along the way.
Right. That's why it didn't get a higher ranking on my Carometer, because I hate when people do this. Obviously, we want to know about the back history, but I also want to hear how fame changed everything in 99. I mean, he was famous, but he was on MTV after Play came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear about interactions in the green room.
I agree.
He hanging out with P. Diddy? And so I want to know about that. And like you said, maybe there's a part 2. But there is a story in the book where after he put out Animal Rights, mm-hmm. which isn't a dance album, it's more guitar-driven and slower, Axl Rose calls Moby up and leaves a message on his machine and says, dude, this was a bold album. I'm listening to it nonstop.
Wow.
So even though the world didn't love Animal Rights, wow, Axl Rose did. Yeah.
Actually, it's funny. A quick story. I was sort of working for this label. I was running this label that was associated with Elektra. And I went to an A&R meeting where the Moby's manager at the time was there, and he was going on to the A&R person at Elektra about, well, he's doing a cover of That's When I Reached for My Revolver. Mm-hmm. And I could see on her face, the A&R person, that she had no idea what he was talking about. And so I chimed in, I go, oh, the Mission of Burma song, that's excellent, that'll be fantastic. And she looked at me like, and it's funny how those things happen, because she looked at me and suddenly I was like the golden boy. Even though it was just he could have said 50 other things and I would have no idea what he was talking about.
Right.
So, but Moby was quite the instrumentalist, and actually a Minor Threat fan too, I think.
Yeah, well, he was in a punk rock band back in the day.
Absolutely.
In New York City. So P. Diddy, speaking of P. Diddy, he announced the Bad Boy Family Reunion Arena Tour, where he will be joined by Lil' Kim, Mace, Faith Evans, Mario Winans, 112, Total, Carl Thomas, The Lox, and French Montana. Earlier this month, P. Diddy said that following the release of his new album, No Way Out 2, he will retire from music to concentrate on film. So is this part of P. Diddy's swan song? What does it rank on your carometer?
Well, given his statement, it goes mm-hmm. it goes way down to me. Now it goes down to like a 3.
No, that he wants to concentrate on film?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, well, wait a minute. When were you concentrating on music exactly? I mean, seriously, I mean, I may be
right.
Wrong. Am I wrong?
He's been out of the picture for a while.
Well, I mean, he's been doing fashion, and he's apparently been doing a really good job with fashion.
And making TV channels.
Yeah, and so he's been doing a lot
Revolt.
Of other things, but it's not like he's been out there making a lot of new
right.
music or participating. I mean, maybe he's been participating behind the scenes, I don't know, but I haven't heard his name mentioned in association with music in quite some time.
See, Lyle, I thought this would rank higher on your carometer because, like you wanted in Desert Trip, he said he's going to retire. So this might be one of the last times you get to see P. Diddy.
Well, I hadn't thought of it from that standpoint. You might be right about that. Okay. So if you're a fan and this is your last chance, then that makes it good. All right. I'll up it a little bit. I'll go to like 6 maybe then.
Okay. Now, you might want to lower it because I heard, and I don't know if this
up,
follows...
Down, up, down.
So
that's part of the jingle. So, up, down, up, down.
There's the Bad Boy Family Reunion Tour, and I heard that to end his music career, he wanted to do one final world tour, P. Diddy. So I don't know if he's going to... So there might be 2, or maybe the Bad Boy Family Reunion will just be it.
You better go see Kiss because they're never going to play again.
Yeah.
After 1999, it's all over.
So speaking, and on my carometer, I give this, I give it a 5.
Okay.
So this week, Sia announced a world tour called Nostalgic for the Present, where she will be supported by Miguel and Aluna George. Sia does not tour often. She usually does festival stops. So Sia actually going out on a world tour. What does this rank on your carometer?
Well, is it going to be face or no face?
I would assume it's no face.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I really like her, so I don't really care about the face or no face thing. But some people seem to. But I would think that it's going to be a little hard to pull off an entire show with no face. I mean, you're going to have...
No! People are raving about her show.
Oh, well, okay. There you go. I mean, I guess
because she's out on stage with a mic, and I think she just has that big bow in front of her face.
Oh, okay.
So you get to see her, but you just don't get to see her face.
You know, interestingly enough, someone that we both know used to have this thing at his house every summer, and she performed. It was like a thing where people would come and do some performances, and she performed in his like living room. But she did it. She did it without like she was there. I mean, it was her.
Oh, yeah.
And my daughter happened to be there, and I said, you know, you're like one of the last people ever to see her face. So consider
yourself
lucky.
Because I remember when Sia was just sort of an alternative sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought that she would be a pop sensation as she is now.
No, I mean the first real awareness I had was 07, and then of course she, when she did when she did Just Breathe for the end of 6 Feet Under, and when I heard that, I was hooked, like hooked on her and her voice. So it should that should be interesting. All right, good for her.
So what does this rank on your carometer?
Well, I think if you're a fan of Sia, it's like a 10.
I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay.
I'm not going to go higher because my wife desperately wants to see Sia. She's performing at the Panorama Festival in New York City, and because of those stupid radius clauses, we don't get a proper Sia show.
Oh.
I have to go to a festival to see Sia.
Now, you should explain what a radius clause is.
So what happens is when you play these big festivals like Lollapalooza or Austin City Limits or Panorama, you can't play in that area for 3 months, 5 months, 6 months. I mean, depending what the clause is, could be 9 months.
So it's the it's the distance radius around the center where the center would be the actual festival. And then there's a literally a mileage radius around that area. So within that radius, you cannot, within that circle, you cannot play.
So if Sia plays Randall's Island, she's not going to play Madison Square Garden 2 weeks later.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
So I want to see Sia in a proper venue with a proper at a proper Sia show. So that's why it gets an 8. Now, if she adds a Madison Square Garden show, which she won't, it'd be a 10. So, Justin Timberlake has a brand new single and music video for Can't Stop the Feeling, which is also the number one song in the country. What does this rank on your carometer?
Well, what do you think of the song?
Listen, Lyle, this is not a diss. This is not a diss. It's like a.
Yeah, that's where I feel.
It's not like a two thumbs up, like, yeah, man, it's a, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, the first time I heard it, I thought, like, well, okay, this is going to be a hit, you know?
It's funny,
I thought.
How many times am I going to say, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, you know.
Jimmy the cab driver, it's a nice song.
It's good, you know, it's Justin, you know, it's good, you know, but it's funny, when I heard it, I actually thought that it might be Pharrell behind it. Because it had it had some very Pharrell. Yeah,
it
had some
It feels like happy to me.
It does, it has a Pharrellism to it. But then when I looked up the writers, it's actually Justin, it's Max Martin, we all know, and it's another Swede, Shellback. Do you know Shellback?
Yeah.
Right, a metal guy, and a punk guy who now like writes all these incredible hits. So if you look those guys up, Max Martin and Shellback, they're both Swedish, and the Swedes have taken over the pop world. But you'll be amazed when you see the number of songs that those guys have written. So
the thing that bothered me about that song is that the day it was released, the internet went nuts. all the morning shows were talking about it, and I always hate when morning shows jump on pop stories like that.
In another story this morning, Justin Timberlake released a new song.
And then it wasn't the official video, but it was just a bunch of famous people singing along to the song.
Oh.
And they showed Justin, and he played air drums while the song was playing. And I'm like, no, man, that's a no-no.
Yeah,
I can't stand when an artist listens to their own music and then they play air drums.
Oh,
Don't do it.
You've been in those meetings, right?
Oh, yes.
Those horrible, horrible things.
Yes,
where they
talked about it.
They come into play and they're like they're singing along with their own stuff and they're looking in your face and shaking their finger and it's like, oh my god, please don't do this. Air drums. Oh yeah, and that's a real drummy song there, you know.
So have we given this a rank yet on the carometer?
No, I mean, I think I'll go with a 5 because it's Justin Timberlake. It's going to be a song of the summer, no question. But in terms of my caring, did I care? I don't care whether he comes out with a song or doesn't, basically.
Yeah, I'll give it a 6.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nice to have him back in the game, but we don't need the morning show news stories about it.
No, I love when the morning show people use the term like dropped. He just dropped a new single. Dropped! It's like, come on, man. Stop doing that.
So do you have any birthdays today?
There are a lot of birthdays today, and I'll go through them pretty quickly. We've got Joe Bonsall from the Oak Ridge Boys, famous country band, is 68 today. George Strait, an even more famous country singer, is 64. The balladeer Jack Johnson is 41 years old.
Really?
Yes, he is.
You know what? I announced him at a festival a couple years ago on his birthday.
Wow.
So that means that, oh, wow, it's May already. That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had, I think I had 40,000 people sing happy birthday to him.
Ooh.
And then there were some people on my team who were afraid that the producers were going to get mad because happy birthday at that point wasn't in the public domain. But they loved it. They were happy with
it. Okay, so. That's good. Yeah. Yeah. And Jack seems like a good guy.
Good guy, yep.
The John Coltrane loving but metal guitar playing Paige Hamilton from the band Helmet.
Yes!
Is 56 years old today.
Yes!
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo and virtually every conceivable TV show theme and movie music that you know is 66. Jenny Berggren from Ace of Base. Remember them?
Yes!
Swedish act is 44. Somewhat younger than I thought she would be.
Yeah.
And two of the big shout-outs I've got here is Rick Wakeman from Yes, the keyboard player who would do the two-handed thing, you know, with one keyboard on one side and one on the other. He's 67 years old. And interestingly enough, he played on some surprising records. He played on a lot of Ozzy Osbourne stuff, which is kind of interesting.
Okay.
And the biggest shout-out I've got is to Toya Wilcox. Now, most of you don't know who Toya. She went by the name Toya. She was a little bit of a hit during the sort of new wave age. More recently, she does the voiceover narration for a lot of British nature shows. So when you hear,
wow,
the thrush has established its nest in the hedgerow. And she's married to Robert Fripp, the guitar player extraordinaire from King Crimson. Toya was I had a few wonderful experiences with Toya. She's a hoot. She's a really wonderful lady. Wish her the best. She's 58 years old today.
All right. I love that you shouted out Paige Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
Because for my college radio station, I interviewed Henry Bogdan, who was the bass player of Helmet.
Right.
And at the time, they had a song with House of Pain called Just Another Victim off of the Judgment Night soundtrack. And while I was interviewing him at the end, I said, hey, do you guys do that live? And he's like, yeah. And I said, well, who does the rap part? And he's like, well, we don't do the rap part. And I said, well, can I do the rap part? He's like, you know the words? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I'll have to ask Paige. So I was there. They actually opened the show with Just Another Victim, and I never got to sing the rap part.
Oh.
So I don't know if it was cleared by Paige.
Oh,
yeah.
Well.
Next time.
I'd like to have that recording.
So the number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 this week, Can't Stop the Feeling from Justin Timberlake, as we alluded to earlier. The number one album on the Billboard 200, Views from Drake. The number one song on iTunes, Can't Stop the Feeling from Justin Timberlake. The number one album on iTunes, Lemonade from Beyonce. And the number one song on Spotify this week, One Dance from Drake featuring Wizkid and Kyla. Here's a little taste of it right now.
Grips on your waist, front way, back way. You know that I don't play. Street's not safe, but I never run away. Even when I'm away. OT, OT, there's never much love when we go OT. I pray to make it back in one piece. I pray That's why I need a one dance. Got a Hennessy in my hand. One more time before I go. Higher powers taking a hold on me. I need a one dance. Got a Hennessy in my hand. One more time before I go. Higher powers taking a hold on me.
So it is time for our music picks of the week. Mine, in celebration of Pet Sounds turning 50 years old, is Sloop John B. from the Beach Boys. And there are many songs in the pantheon of music about going home. And I remember one time I was in college. The meals were bad. I just needed the semester to end. This song came on the radio and it spoke to me. And I said, yeah, that's my best I want to go home song of all time. So here is Sloop John B. from the Beach Boys.
We come on the Sloop John B. My grandfather and me. Around Nassau town we did roam. Drinking all night.
Have you ever heard of Me First and the Gimme Gimmes?
No.
The punk supergroup that does covers of oldie songs. Fat Mike from NoFX, lead singer.
So it's Fat Mike's thing, yeah.
Yeah, so they do a really good rendition of Sloop John B.
Oh, cool.
But not better than the Beach Boys. So I think that's my favorite song on Pet Sounds.
Really?
Do you have a favorite on Pet Sounds?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I got to say that I'm not with you on Sloop John B.
Really?
No, I'm not.
Let me have it. Let me have it. Let me have it, Lyle.
I just think it's gimmicky. I mean,
really?
Well, it sort of reminds me of all those little, like, it sort of reminds me of The Who's A Quick One. You know, it's sort of like, it's like this little story, and you kind of, you know, and it has a lot of whimsical aspects to it, but. And I mean, obviously, you can't. There's no way to attack the vocals and everything because they're all great, you know. And it's really wonderfully done, as is the entire record. But but if I was gonna go with like my favorite songs, I think it would have to be God Only Knows. I mean,
okay.
You know, I mean, I know that's the sappy, sentimental choice, and I applaud you for picking a song that's a little bit different. But it always seemed to me, but you know, here's the funny thing. I woke up this morning and I had this thing in my head. Now, if you listen to Sloop John B and then you listen to Rhinestone Cowboy by Glen Campbell, right? They're very similar. The songs are really similar. And Glen Campbell played on Pet Sounds.
Wow.
So then I thought, oh man, I've uncovered yet another controversy. So I ran to the computer and I looked it up. But it turns out that Glen Campbell did not write "Rhinestone Cowboy," and the guy who wrote it may or may not. I'm sure he heard Sloop John B, but I don't. You know, he wasn't involved in that at all. So, damn.
Okay.
Damn.
Now, what is your song pick of the week?
Well, my song pick of the week is also the Beach Boys, and it's a song that was supposed to be on Pet Sounds, called Caroline No.
Whoa.
And the story goes that Brian Wilson, who was obviously the composer and driving force behind Pet Sounds, wanted to do the song. For some reason, it wasn't going to be on the album or something. And he actually went and recorded the song with the same facilities and everything. But he didn't have any Beach Boys on it at all. And he used the famous group of studio musicians called The Wrecking Crew.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a documentary out called The Wrecking Crew from 2008. You really should see it because it's talk about fascinating. Particularly the fact that there was a female bass player who played on all of these sessions. And in a day when female musicians in the rock world were completely unheard of. And she was behind the scenes. And it features harpsichord. And it's just, I think it's just a really nice song. So it's 1966. It's the same exact vintage as the rest of Pet Sounds.
All right. Caroline No, Lyle's pick of the week.
Where did your long hair go? Where is the girl I used to know? How could you lose that? You'd never change, but that's not that made me love you so much then. Could we ever bring them back once they have gone? Oh, Carolina,
So Glenn Campbell, he was in the Wrecking Crew, right?
He was. He was, you know, there was a core group, and then there were some people who sort of came in and came out depending on the situation. But it was one of those things where these guys, they became the go-to people. And we were talking earlier about, you know, about Luther Vandross being on, you know, Bowie records. And people say, "Well, how did that happen? How did Luther Vandross end up?" But well, you have to remember that before Luther Vandross was a major star in his own right, mm-hmm. he was a guy on the scene. So if you walked into a studio and said to the producer and engineer, like, "I really need this kind of vocal," they'd go, "Let me get on the phone." And they'd call Luther. Or if you wanted to get a guitar player, you called Jimmy Page. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you did. And so that world was so tight, you know, so close-knit that everyone said, well, if you want this style, we're going to get this person if you need these people. But in the case of the Wrecking Crew, the great thing about them was they could do almost anything.
Isn't that a great name, too?
Oh, it's terrific.
Like, when you have the Wrecking Crew come in to be on your album, you know you're going to get quality product.
It's sort of like you send in the wolf. You know what I mean? It's like Pulp Fiction, you know? Oh, well,
That's all you need to say.
Exactly. You're saying the Wrecking Crew, we're going to make a great record. Yeah, absolutely.
I got to interview Glenn Campbell once. It was a phone interview.
Uh-huh.
And I think they gave me the number to his house because I think he answered and then his wife got on the phone for a little bit. And he was doing press for an album, and his wife was staying on top of it because after 15 or 20 minutes, you could hear her say, "All right, hey, we got to do the next one now." He's like, okay, well, I got to go. I'm like, okay. So it was cool. It was like talking to my grandpa.
That's great. Glenn was for those people out there who don't know Glenn Campbell or just know him from things like Rhinestone Cowboy, I mean, this guy was an incredibly accomplished musician. Was a tremendous, tremendous performer. And really, he's one of those people who unfortunately kind of gets a little bit lost in the slipstream. But he was terrific. And he had his own variety show.
Yes. And he always picked the right songs to sing.
Absolutely.
So you could say, yeah, he didn't write his own songs. I'm like, yeah, but the ones he picked, felt like he wrote them.
Like Wichita Lineman, you know. He knew how to pick songs, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to play a brand new game of Ask Lyle.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question, but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life. So take the photographs and still frames in your mind. Hang it on the shelf in good health and good time. Memories and dead skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth it all the while.
All right, back from the quick timeout, Jim Scheer with Lyle Presler. Time now for Ask Lyle.
We need a jingle for that too,
Ask
by
Lyle.
The way.
Yeah. I mean, I like the little, I don't know what that would be, like a sound snippet. A sting, is that a stinger? But yeah, if someone wants to write a whole jingle, I'll take it. You know, but that requires effort on whoever's going to do it. And we appreciate the effort you put forth if you want to do it. Anyway, Lyle, this one comes from Rick Hankey. Yeah. You know Rick.
I do. Yeah. Yes.
So Rick, a good friend of ours, I used to work with Rick. He said, remember when you were in Minor Threat and you had that song Straight Edge and there were those lyrics, I'm a person just like you, but I've got better things to do? Remember that? Is that true?
Remember?
And I guess I should have read that in a Chris Farley voice.
Remember when you were in Minor Threat and it was like a band and there were other guys in the band with you? There was a guy named Ian in the band. Remember that?
So, Rick, I appreciate the humor, but there is a question in that. Do people ever come up to you like Chris Farley with Minor Threat questions like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, you know, not so much anymore, but I would get questions. The ones I really liked the most were when people would come up to me and say, you know, your band changed my life. It saved my life. It changed my life. It saved my life. And the polite thing to do is to just say, wow, that's great. Mm-hmm. And the impolite, well, not impolite, but the sort of, I guess the impolite thing to do is to say, can you be specific? And, you know, and then, but you see, you have to be prepared. Like, if you're going to do that, then you have to be prepared to sit there for 15 or 20 minutes because it's going to be a long story. It's not going to be some simple, you know, well, I was driving down the road and I heard a lyric and immediately focused my attention on the road and didn't hit the deer, which would have killed me. You know, it's never anything like that. It's a long story. And they're all, listen, by the way, they're all great stories. I'm not trying to make fun of anybody at all. You know, I enjoy those actually. And I try to pick my moments to either pry or not pry. But the Chris Farley thing was great because it was just so extreme. You know,
mm-hmm.
But that's what made it terrific. I've never gotten anything quite that crazy, except from Rick Hankey. So,
okay, yeah. I know. I remember one time I was in Mexico, and
I remember one time I was in Mexico. You know, I happened to be in Mexico.
So I happened to be in Mexico. I'm talking to this kid who worked at my hotel. I couldn't speak Spanish. He couldn't speak English. And we had a 15-minute conversation about music, and I said punk. He's like, oh, Minor Threat. And in that 15 minutes, the only thing we could agree on was Minor Threat. And I thought, this is so cool. Like, we're having a Minor Threat conversation in Mexico. This is the only thing that's bringing us together.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Well, that's cool.
That
that's
shows
cool.
you
yeah.
Minor Threat had reach, baby.
Well, it's also,
worldwide
but it
reach.
Also shows you, the tired old cliche that, you know, music is the universal language. You know,
it is.
It doesn't matter what language you speak as long as you can sort of think about, converse about, and feel the music. The funniest things for me are typically when someone comes up to me and tells me that they've gone to see us play after we broke up in a place we never played. And and the impolite thing to do is to go, you're full of it, which I would never do because the thing is people just, like me, they just mess up dates, they forget where they were, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I do it all the time. And so I would, and so usually what I basically do is I say, well, did you enjoy it? And if they say, yeah, it was great, I go, well, then great, you know, because there's no point in arguing it. It's sort of like that concept of like going back in time and meeting yourself and arguing about who's who. There's mm-hmm. really no kind of point in it. And I think that, you know, and everybody's always, they're the best of intentions. It's just that, you know, in 1987, we did not play a festival in Copenhagen, you know.
Okay.
Didn't happen, but that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
And then you wonder, like, who do they have you confused with?
So we can cleanse the palate right now. I have one more question about Minor Threat and one not about Minor Threat. Do you want to hit the Minor Threat question now?
Whichever one you want to do.
Oh, okay. Well, let's stick with Minor Threat. So we know that Minor Threat is never getting back together. But if there was an alien lord who came down to planet Earth and said the fate of the world depended on Minor Threat playing one more festival If you had to play one, what festival would Minor Threat reunite and play at? This is the fate of the world. Now, maybe you want the world to end. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think if it was about saving the world, I think we probably
saving the world.
We'd probably pony up on that one. I would think, yeah. In fact, you know, I've often said that there could conceivably be some sort of dire situation. Not the alien overlords, but a dire situation which could persuade us to do something. I mean, I can't imagine what that would be, but that's always possible. I guess I don't know. But what's your favorite festival, Jim?
You're leaving it to me.
Yeah, what would be the least appropriate festival to play? How about that? We could do the bad boy thing.
Oh my god,
that would be amazing. Can you even imagine?
And you guys should play last.
Oh, yeah.
Or no, you should maybe in the middle, because if you play last, everyone would know that, like, we're going to come at 9:30. But if you played in the middle.
No, we play right before Diddy.
Wow.
Yeah, you see, right before him. So everyone has to be there.
See, this is such a big question. I can't even answer that now. I would need a week to think about it. Would I want you to play Bad Boy, or would I want you to play Lollapalooza?
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously Lollapalooza would be a more welcoming situation.
Or, because I'm lazy, do I just want you to play New York City? Well, play the Panorama Fest.
Well, there you go, because you're lazy.
Yeah, so let me think about that one. I'll come back next week with an answer. Well,
and remember this, of course, it would have to be cleared by the alien overlords, too, who may or may not be following Coachella, Oldchella. Right. You know, we don't know how much of our communications they're intercepting and how they're decoding those interceptions.
He's like, I demand you play Desert Trip.
We want you to play Woodstock. They don't have a Woodstock anymore. But we saw it on the TV. You play now. I don't know what I'm imagining the alien overlords to be. You know, it sort of reminds me of the fact that it seems to me that if you're capable of traversing interstellar space, you're probably a lot smarter than the ones that are portrayed in the movies, where they're too stupid not to realize that someone could just hack into their computer and destroy their ship. You know, I mean, like, we've conquered all of these technical difficulties. Only thing is, we can't figure that part of it out.
All right, final question. You can answer this however you want.
Well, I will answer it however I want, Jim.
Yeah. Here's the question. A few weeks ago, you texted me a random text, and you said that you planted some herbs.
Mm.
So I'm assuming you planted maybe some basil or oregano. And then the day after, there was a commercial, I think for McCormick, talking about long-cut herbs. So what is Lyle Presler's take on long-cut herbs?
I haven't the faintest idea. In fact, they tell you things like you should pinch them back. And I have no idea what that means. Am I supposed to sit there and literally pinch them? Like it says, you know.
Wait, while they're growing?
Yeah, because I guess the idea is, it's sort of like you're trying to stimulate more growth. You know, it's the idea of pruning, right?
Okay.
So, you know, you do that with trees and flowers. You prune them, and it actually stimulates them to grow more.
Okay.
But in the case of herbs, like we got some rosemary. And you know, they have these tiny little spiky, you know, kind of leaves. And it said, pinch them back. And I'm thinking, well, what the hell does that mean? Do I go out there and literally pinch them? Do I take my thumb and forefinger and go, here you go. There you go, pinch. And I don't know the answer to that. So what I typically do, well, what typically happens is we, you know, the springtime comes and we go, we got to get some herbs, which is the dumbest idea because, and we go out and we go to the thing, we buy some herbs and then we sort of plant them and either they get destroyed within 10 seconds, either eaten by rabbits or something, you know. Or the other thing is that somebody else say, like, well, let's go out and cut them. And I'm like, well, if we go out and cut them now, then we might as well just go to the supermarket and buy them. Because then we have no more herbs anymore. I mean, we paid this money for something that we're just going to snip it all off and eat it. So then that results, then the next level of that is that we don't cut them. And then they just become this big thing and there's tons of them and there's nothing you can do with them. And then you just give up and let them die or get eaten by the rabbits. So it's...
Yeah, I've always had, like, I would always have one visit to the herb plant. I'd use like the basil, and then I would never water it, and it would die.
Yeah, I mean that's essentially what happens. Yeah. And you know, but then I know people who are very successful growing stuff like that. I mean, they don't typically live in the city or anything, but there's a lot of rooftop gardens in New York City, and some people do really, really well. But you know, the holy grail of all this stuff is tomatoes. Like, but that requires an enormous amount of work, and you have to really know what you're doing. And it's often hit or miss. Like, you'll go a year and nothing will happen, and then you go another year, and I don't know. But it's an interesting pastime, but it's no more than a pastime.
I'm giving you an insider trading tip on these long cut herbs.
Okay.
So maybe if you have a bunch, cut them long and then go to the farmer's market and it'll be all the rage this summer.
I mean, I could
cut them long though. They can't be like shortcut. Cut them long.
So, I mean, I could go and sell them.
Yeah.
Okay.
But cut them long because that's the trend in 2016.
So you mean, for instance, like if it's basil, right? You don't want to just cut the buds off the basil thing. You want to cut the whole stems? Is that the idea?
No, I think, you know how you get oregano or chives and they'll just be sort of in little, what would that be? Just like they're just mashed up.
Like little nubs of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you want longer nubs.
Oh, okay.
So bigger pieces.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that one's on me.
Okay, good.
That's for you, because I appreciate your green thumb. So that will do it for this week's episode. Once again, if you have any questions for Lyle, hit me up on social media, hashtag Ask Lyle. And Lyle, at this point in time, is not on Twitter. Will this be the week?
At this point in time.
Will this be the week, though? Will this be the week?
Oh, I don't know about that, Jim.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. So maybe I'll get real. Maybe I'll get real drunk one night and accidentally go on it.
Maybe the alien overlord.
They'll demand it. Exactly. Yeah. You're not on Twitter. You must be, and you must play Woodstock 1969.
So. For Lyle Presler, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
So long, farewell, I'll be to say goodnight.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.